So let's listen to a little more of those Bulger jailhouse recordings released in court yesterday.
Oh, Chaya.
Kevin.
Then you turn around.
In this one, Bulger's talking to his brother John about money he funneled to hitman and now government witness John Martorano.
It was handed to him?
No, it went to Mikey Fleming's house.
Wow.
Kevin, Mikey, they whacked it up for me.
Now, did you hear that? How John Bulger says, whacked it up? And then a bit later, there's this.
Hey.
Yeah.
That'll be.
Stir it up.
Yeah. That's amazing, the way I think of it.
Stir it up, which, depending on the context, could mean a lot of things. Linguist Ben Zimmer's been listening closely to the trial of James Whitey Bulger, and he says witness testimony has opened up a time capsule of old-school Boston mob speak, such as the phrase Shylock.
That's a term for a loan shark that actually comes from Shakespeare's The Merchant of Venice.
Or Vig.
Vig is short for vigorish. That's a word that comes most likely from Yiddish, originally from Russian. That describes how much they would charge on top of a bet. That's called the vig, or the juice.
And makeup.
The money that would have to be owed to cover a loss when there was a week when the bets didn't work out. That money had to be paid up the chain, and if you didn't pay the makeup, that could get you hurt.
So, really fascinating glimpse into the language of a gang. But how far back does mob speak actually go, Ben?
You can trace a lot of these terms all the way back to the turn of the 20th century. That's also when we first start getting dictionaries of the underworld that describe a lot of the lingo that was being used by small-time criminals in Boston and other cities. And some of them are quite old. Calling an informant a rat, I mean, that goes all the way back to 1818.
This is so interesting because you've written that when it comes to sort of specialized speech amongst a criminal underworld, that we have documentation of that that goes back to what, the 17th century to 1699 in London?
That's right. The very first dictionary of English slang. They called it a dictionary to understand the canting crew, and cant is the lingo of the criminal underworld. And they would use their own coded language to talk to each other in order to avoid the authorities catching on to what they were talking about, and also to make sure that, you know, people who were being stolen from didn't understand what was happening.
So, Ben, do you detect that there's any Boston dialect of mob speak in particular?
There are terms that seem particular to the Winter Hill Gang that I looked into. For instance, the term boiler. That was a term that was used by John Martorano, which referred to the stolen cars that they used when they were going out on a hit. He also talked about greasers, which referred to the machine guns that they would use. These were terms that had to be explained to the jury when John Martorano was saying, yeah, we went in the boilers and we used the greasers. But I was interested to find out that a term like boiler, which seemed pretty specific to the Winter Hill Gang, actually shows up as early as 1949. There was a book called Criminal Slang by Vincent Monteleone. He was a police captain who had served around the country, and he collected a lot of these expressions. And sure enough, boiler is in there, too.
You know, that shady language, it seems that it's for a long time served the purpose that you're speaking of, which is to hide illicit activities. But groups have also formed their own idioms or their own cultural dialects for other reasons, too. I'm thinking of groups that have suffered a huge amount of discrimination, for example. I know in the gay community, there's been a long history of coded language as well. So I'm wondering what you think, from a linguist perspective, the other purposes that this kind of coded language serves.
It also serves as a kind of in-group marker. It shows how slang very often is set up as a kind of opposition to our standard discourse, something... a kind of a code develops among a particular group that shows that we are part of this club, we are part of this group. You know, even among the criminals, one of the very interesting aspects of their language is how everybody gets a nickname.
That's a good point, Ben. And there are so many examples of that in this case, such as Stephen the Rifleman Flemmy, Jimmy the Sniff Katz, and even the man at the center of the story, James Whitey Bulger.
That's right. We can actually see nicknames in the Boston criminal underworld going back to a really interesting piece that was written way back in 1901 by a writer named Josiah Flint. And in Boston, he met up with one local thug whose nickname was Boston Common Slimy. He met up with Slimy at Bughouse Mary's Hangout, and then Slimy introduced him to all these other characters with names like Frisky Martin and the Boston Switcher. So we can see there's a very long tradition of these colorful nicknames in Boston and other major cities.
Well, in comparison, Whitey and the Sniff seem almost tame. Ben Zimmer, executive producer of the Visual Thesaurus and Vocabulary.com. Thanks so much.
Thank you. Always a pleasure.
And stay with us. Coming up, free speech rights versus abortion clinic safety. As the Supreme Court agrees to hear a challenge to the state's abortion clinic buffer zone law, we'll explore the debate. I'm Anthony Brooks.
And I'm Meghna Chakrabarty. This is Radio Boston.